This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Might help if I turn on the right microphone. We have a great show ahead for you today. Taking you on a bit of a Eurofantastic trip. It's sort of like our own version of Foodie Eurovision happening right here between now and 2 o'clock. We'll do Greek, Italian, Spanish, Turkish, throw in a bit of South American. It's all happening. Good afternoon. We are talking cravings, and it's only 1 minute past one. No news today. And Tad, as they say, no news is good news.
It certainly is.
Does that mean we have to... we should do a quick hello to... It's not Hoboken, New Jersey,
no,
is it?
No, it's not. It's New Providence,
New Jersey. Providence, yes. New Jersey. Linda, if you're listening, I'm getting in first this week. Hello. And hello to all of you sitting in your car. You might be on your way to the Northside Bazaar at the Laird. You might be out and about heading to Caulfield. You might already be at the track. I've got a couple of tips for the cup as well that I should give you before 2 o'clock. Then you know what they say about tips in the races?
No.
Be nice to your mother. That's the only tip you should ever accept.
I'll go with that.
Tad Lombardo is my co-host. He is joining me right here in the studio with three very clever guests who sort of span pretty much most of the European continent, I think. We'll throw in some South American there as well. Let's start with the lovely young man over in the corner. Yeah. Leno from Simply Spanish, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We're pleased to have you. Now, Simply Spanish, three locations. I'm going to sound like Frank Acozzo in a minute. Three locations across Melbourne, two in the city, one at South Melbourne Market, Correct. Which was the original.
That's right.
A quick précis about you've got 1 minute. Tell me about Simply Spanish.
Well, Simply Spanish, I think we started 9 years ago at South Melbourne Market. It's basically was just a journey into Spanish cuisine, some tapas and paellas. And it's just it's grown. It's captured everyone's imagination, and people really love it.
And the world's greatest paella.
And just recently, we won the best paella outside of Spain. We cooked the traditional paella valenciana, and we awarded the best outside of Spain.
How many different paellas are there? I suppose depends that's how long is a piece of string, isn't it?
Yeah, it depends who you ask. Look, I think what happened is the paella originated from Valencia. What happens is, as you can imagine, when something is exported or moved on, you try to adapt it to what's available to you. So, as you can imagine, if it went seaside, they would use fish and seafood to make a paella. Inland, you would see things like chicken, rabbit, pork.
And if you move into the sort of the more Moorish influenced part of Spain, it's going to be a completely different argument again, correct?
Yes, correct. Excellent. So basically what the competition was all about was preserving the authentic recipe of the paella valenciana, which consists of chicken, rabbit, snails, beans, and
it's a very Ted, you're looking at my face going, he's hungry again, isn't he?
Yes. It's an amazing recipe. It's not I don't think it's for everyone's taste, but when you try it, it really is something extraordinary.
When you've got rabbit and snails and chicken in the same dish,
correct.
The only thing missing for me there is cheese.
There it is.
Yeah, unfortunately, I won't see that on the table.
My obsession is cheese. We might switch mics just for a second, Tad.
Yeah.
We haven't actually said hello, Tad.
Hello, how are you?
Good. My regular co-host, we've got an email already from New Providence,
no
New
way.
Jersey, I bet.
And?
What does it say?
Oh, I'm about to tell you.
Sorry, I shouldn't be off mic. It says, "Hi, Ted and Pete. I'm listening. Your mother."
Okay, it's a little spooky, but that's okay.
Tad's mum is in New Providence in New Jersey, and each week she joins us at this time to so she gets to hear her son's voice. Yeah.
That's sweet.
Switch that mic across, Tad, and I will introduce Kathy. Kathy is from Sweet Greek at the Pran Market.
That's right, Pete.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You're about to throw your second book into the market.
Yes, I certainly am. We're launching my second book, Sweet Greek Life, on October 26th. We're having a great big party on that night.
Oh, don't tell people where it is. You know, the gays, they'll show up to anything. If there's something shiny.
I'm not saying, but it's it's a wonderful celebration of life, and that's what this book is all about. It's to celebrate life.
And why do you do what you do?
I'm very passionate, for starters, about food. I'm very passionate about my culture and the food that I grew up on and with and learnt cooking from my mother. So I think that's what it is. I came from an investment banking background. Oh. And I cooked from the day, not really, but
there was a hint of sarcasm in my voice.
But look, I did that my whole life, and then of course being diagnosed with cancer changed everything, and that meant that I had one chance to, after the treatment, and that I could, if I possibly could, I had one chance to perhaps fulfill my dream. And this is why I do what I do today.
Without wanting to make you sound like an alcoholic, you're now 5 years cancer-free.
I'm 5 years cancer-free. I'm very happy about that.
Congratulations. That's a recent discovery.
Yes. Mm. A couple of weeks ago, I had all my big tests, and I'm now cancer-free 5 years. So I feel like I can say that and celebrate it.
Well, as you should.
And that's why this book is my, Sweet Greek Life, my shed table. Because
did you have a little glass of red senior on the news of that?
Plus the rest.
Renee, come forward to your microphone. You are
I'm here.
You're there. You are Clay Pots. Tell us about, so you've got also got three locations?
Yes. Yeah, Clay Pots in St Kilda. That's been around about almost 20 years now. Probably 20 years. And that started as a small little shop, and it grew organically. But first of all, thank you for having me, Pete.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Tad and I are a delight. We're a we now, mate.
I got something from Cathy when she said food is a celebration of life, and that's where I am as well, and I think Spurdy knows.
Absolutely.
And,
Let me intrude on your business model for a second, because you, just before we came to here, you sort of dropped a little bomb that you have essentially given your business to your staff.
Yes, it's a trial period for 1 year, but it is happening, and look, I don't want to talk too much about it. However, if it works out eventually...
Yeah.
It will be the achievement that I'm most proud of.
It's the legacy you can leave.
It's the legacy, that's right. Legacy, because it's a mortal life, rather short, and I love the idea that I can successfully pass it on and can continue. Also, it kind of, in one person's hands, it sort of dies out eventually. Mm. So you need to inject that eagerness. Mm.
It's a very unique business model to have. From that sort of thing. Do you know of anyone else that has done
it? I don't know of anyone that's done it. There might be equivalents of in other industries. But as I said, if it works, I'll be very happy.
That sounds really good. I know from my experiences that keeping that motivation going is very difficult. It's a draining business to be in. And just to keep that momentum and that energy going all the time, it's so difficult. So,
and trying to keep things fresh and... ahead of trend rather than just on trend.
Absolutely.
When it comes to food, we've always got to be one step ahead of the game almost. You've got to be doing something that somebody else isn't doing or working with an ingredient differently. And it's really hard to have that motivation when you're also facing the computer trying to get through your MYOB and do your BAS statement and so forth and so on.
Absolutely, because I think when I first started this, that was the goal. I was cooking in a kitchen, and I seem to be doing everything but that these days.
HR, it's you're the cleaner, it's you're
very complicated
running around in your car trying to pick up stuff that the chefs have run out of. Although I imagine that South Melbourne market's probably a bit easier. You can just run around the corner.
Absolutely, but I think it's just even simple things. It's just like everything is on the internet, everything's multimedia, everything it's on your phone, and it's just keeping up with those trends and making sure that you're on top of it. Everyone knows who you are, and look, I find that really frustrating, but hey, that's the world we live in now.
But I think the other thing too, it's we all try to be ahead of the trend, not just sort of keeping up with the trend, and I think that's the hardest part, is trying to work out something that works.
Well, I travel every year for that exact reason. I go off to Spain.
You travel for a tax dodge.
I call it what you like. I like to say it's research.
A tax claim.
I'm always looking for new ideas, and it's never that simple. You know, I've come back in the past with one or two good products that have made a huge difference, but the last couple of trips, I've struggled to find something that I feel I could use and make my own.
Renan, do you go through the same process?
Well, it's not so much for me. Like, what did you say, Lena? What was it that the main remark that you made? You get tired, sort of.
Well,
look, the enthusiasm. Look, I'm not tired in that sense. I'm saying as you are, and it's you kind of feel like you're repeating yourself, and it gets harder, and also eagerness.
Mm.
And for me, what was the most important aspect of this decision was legacy and continuity, and also a way of rewarding the people who have been with me a long time.
Mm.
I love everybody who works for me, but I have to make a decision based on capacity and see how it goes. But legacy and continuity and passing it on, not a poison chalice, something that works is the aim.
Mm. Kathy, do you find that you have to look abroad for inspiration for what you do, or is what you do sort of inherently, traditionally Greek and it's there?
No, definitely. I do like to go abroad. I was in Greece 2 years ago and was able to research an enormous amount of material and ideas that I had never thought of before. But I'm trying to at this stage. I have enough material from just my upbringing at this stage of where I am at the moment in order to work with it and play with it. And that's what I've done with Sweet Greek Life. The first book that I wrote was a traditional book based on everything tradition. This one here
is stuff you learned from your mum from her mum.
So I think you have to start from there. You have to start from there. If what my legacy is to leave behind something that future generations can look back on and say that I'd like to cook that dish of lima beans in the oven. That's what I want to leave behind.
And is there, in a sense, is this instructional for maybe a generation of younger Greek Australians who have a disconnection with the heritage in the family?
That's right. And that's because, for example, growing up, Mum didn't want to cook, or she didn't pay attention to Grandma or whatever. And for me, the one way that you can maintain your culture, even if we're living here in Australia, it doesn't matter where you are, there are three elements. There's religion, food, and language that identify you as a culture as such. So
I would take religion out of that. I think there's a culture, there's a language, and there's an ideology.
And ideology, okay, fair enough.
I love the word ideology, whenever you can use it.
Fair enough, point eight. But that's what differentiates you, particularly food and language. So, and it's how do you hold on to that? And I wanted people to understand that Greek cuisine was more than a souvlaki and tzatziki.
And a moussaka.
Which I make a mean moussaka, and I love my moussaka, and so does everybody else. But I make a lot more too.
I'm heading over to your store. Tad, grab that microphone for a second, because I think what we're about to enjoy, and this brings you in as well, I've got to explain. I've got two South Melbourne Market store holders and two Prahran Market store holders. So
that's right.
I might have to jump in the middle at some point and determine which is the better market. But I think for me, this is going to be this next sort of 45 minutes is going to be a bit of a cultural journey for us. Definitely. To see what we can pull out.
I don't necessarily think it's which market is better. I think each market offers something a little bit different than the other ones. And it's important to sort of celebrate it, because we're all part of the Melbourne food, the food scene. And it's just one of those things where different markets do different things bit differently.
Queen Vic is part of the Melbourne markets, or Markets of Melbourne is beast as well. And then if you look at Dandenong, there's a completely different demographic and a completely different kind of market.
Absolutely.
Jump over to Footscray and you'll see something different again.
Yeah.
We're going to explore all of that, Tad Lombardo and myself, between now and 2 o'clock. You are here with us on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thank you, Gabriel. You are on Joy 94.9. It is 1:15. This is Cravings, Tad Lombardo and myself, taking you through until 2 o'clock. And we are on a bit of a cultural exploration today, looking at not just why we cook and what we cook, but I think that there's a reason of where we come from first. And we were just having a quick discussion we've all tried something else. We've all gone out of the industry, or we all started somewhere else and came to the industry. Ted, I repeat this every week. You're an engineer, now
that's
a chocolatier.
Right. Yeah.
Kathy, you mentioned you're a merchant banker and then moved to food.
Correct. That's right.
Renan, what did you do before you moved to food?
A writer, a vagabond, a traveler.
A vagabond.
A lot of those have been in the industry all of their life.
And I guess, Lena, your story was slightly different in that. Sorry, Lena.
I started in hospitality and moved away from it into. I studied engineering before I realised that my passion really was in hospitality and food. So I went back into it, yeah.
Do you get sick of the overuse of the word passion in our industry?
I do. It's probably, if there's a better way of describing it, it'd be great, but I think it is.
I'm going to create that word, and it's going to be a brand new word to the English language, and we're going to coin it, because passion is so overused that it's becoming, someone says, oh, I'm quite passionate about something, and I just glaze over because, and I blame the MasterChef phenomenon for that. It's given us a lot of good things, but it's also given us a few bad ones.
Yeah, you're right.
Passion and journey.
Yeah, I was just going to say journey.
Journey's a nice, journey is a nice word, I think, because I think every one of us in here has had a journey.
Correct.
To take us where we are now.
But then reality TV has taken that word and completely bastardized
yes.
it.
Yes. Yes.
So don't watch it.
Yes.
Well, I try not to, but so much of our television is reality television that you can't yeah. almost avoid it. Yes.
I'd rather call the journey the road less travelled, actually. I think, again, there's certain words that are just completely overused, and sometimes there's just no other way to describe it. But
you could just easily say being in the
that's
world.
That's right, yeah.
There's the philosopher coming out
there
of
you,
my friend. That's awesome. an open question for the four of you. How does your upbringing, your with sort of the influence of culture, determine what you do? You know, you said you're Spanish and Italian.
Yeah.
Renan, you're born in
Brazil.
Well,
I was
Brazil,
born in Brazil.
Grew up in Turkey.
Turkish parents lived in Europe for different periods, and so typical Australian.
Kathy, also you're
Australian born
Greek
parents,
and Tad, you're an Italian parent and an
American. My father's side is Italian, yeah. And then American, and then immigrated to Australia.
So it's a group question, and anyone jump in. How much does that cultural determination inform what it is that you do?
Well, can I put a quick word? I don't think there's a gene for cooking.
No, there's not.
But there's certainly, if you are from a culture where you celebrate life through food, if as a young child you have not been kept away from the kitchen, you don't have the fear of cooking, and you have to have the love of people. That's the main ingredient in all cooking. Your love of people and wanting to celebrate. I didn't grow up very close to my family, but I was not divorced entirely from all this experience. Mm-hmm. And, of course, traveling helps. My family loves seafood. My mother can sit down and eat 1 kilo of sardines at a time. Now, these things necessarily pass me, but I'm kind of have a sensibility that supports it. And when I came, so I did some fishing in the Mediterranean. When I came here, I worked on prawn trawlers. So it was very natural for me to pass into cooking. Natural transition.
I think it's also too. It's those cultural things, but it's also work ethic as well. And not everybody has the same level of work ethic that you need to actually be successful in hospitality in the food industry, because it's hard work and it's long hours, and you know
it's
a lot of people.
Unsociable times.
Totally. Yeah.
But then I want to counter that, because I think every person that I've had in here that was born for hospitality, whether they worked in it earlier or not, that is in hospitality, and I use that term quite broadly, has said, it's not unsociable because all of my friends do this.
True.
So when I'm finishing work at 11 or 12 o'clock at night, so are my buddies. So
yeah.
I think we talk a lot about it being unsociable. You make those social networks within the same hours.
You do. Yeah. I think, though, in my own situation, you know, choosing this path later on in life, it's not so much the social thing. You're too tired at the end of the day. You just want to go home.
Yeah.
For me, but obviously younger, it would have been a definite social social engagement, and you go out after work, like you said, and meet people that way and do all that. But you have different responsibilities then, obviously, and different things that you have to worry about.
Then you end up getting married and having children.
That's right.
Lino, you're half Spanish, half Italian?
Yeah, yeah. See, I was fortunate enough to have had parents from different cultures. And also we grew up in different parts of the world. So I was exposed to Latin America and South America for quite some time.
Because you were in Venezuela?
Venezuela. Mm. And so I experience a lot of Latin American cuisine. South America speaks Spanish. The Spanish conquered South America, therefore that's where we got the language from, but they brought some of their culture across as well. But to make that journey from South America to Spain, to see where things just, there was a misinterpretation of the cuisine, but it, you know, obviously a lot of the stuff that was available in Spain wasn't available in South America, but just the diversity with the menus, and I find that quite fascinating. So, you know, a lot of the time I try and incorporate something Latin American into something Spanish to give it a new twist.
Have you gone to the guinea pigs of Peru yet?
I was in Peru. I did the Machu Picchu thing quite a while back, and was it llama and guinea pig was pretty much all that was on the menu. So that was quite fascinating. But no, we're not that extreme. No,
I don't think we can legally do it here.
Probably not.
No,
probably
no.
Not.
So I want to. I'm going to rephrase my question. When you were growing up, you're obviously immersed in different cultures in different parts of the world. How much of that cultural significance sits in what goes on your plate or in your store? Might be the question I'm trying to get to.
I find, when you say cultural significance, when you're doing a dish, a justice by the way you're cooking it, I think that is part of that cultural significance. You know, you respect the produce and how you prepare it, whether it's a Greek dish or a Spanish dish or seafood at clay pots. I mean, if you respect the product, I think that's a big part of it.
Kathy, is it the same for you?
Yes, without a doubt. I think the taking the ingredients, and for me, the memory of my mother and visualising, because I can't do it now, but visualising what she used to do and how she used to do things is what I'm trying to pay tribute to. Mm. Now I feel that I've also got the luxury of being able to do my own twists on things too. So being at the Paran Market, for example, will allow me to walk around and look at an ingredient and a product and say, yeah, you know what? For example, I've been making a vegetarian moussaka, and I've also been making a gluten-free. Yeah, I know. But you got to cater for that. But it was an idea, and it works. And I'm also doing the gluten-free version now too. So you start off with a core idea, concept, which is cultural, and it's part of your upbringing. For me, I just want to say something here now too. Like, for me also, I have to say, what also started this journey for me, and it goes back to culture. The day that I was diagnosed with cancer was during our Holy Week, and it was the day that was on Holy Thursday when we dye our eggs red and we bake and we do so all those beautiful things.
Christos Anesti.
That's on the Saturday. Yeah. So that was, you know, went home. My mum would always, I never had time to cook and prepare these things. So she was at my house baking and doing the eggs and whatever. I opened up the front door after having the news, and then the house smelt beautiful, the aromas and of baking and all that sort of stuff. And now I thought, oh, you know, how am I going to pass this information on now? She was so happy, and I thought, oh, well, we'll do this after Easter anyway. So that was a decision I made then. And anyway, and she says to me, look at this. It was so successful today, great baking day. Everything's worked. But for a moment, I thought, my God, she's still doing this for me. Who's going to do it for my sons? You know, I thought, this is like, mm-hmm. I need, and that was a very important moment for me. And that's why, for me, it's all part of leaving this legacy for future generations, mm. using the past generation as my core, my base to work from.
My guests are Lino, Renan, Kathy, and, of course, my co-host is Tad Lombardo. We're having a bit of a cultural journey and maybe a little philosophical journey, I think, about food. We will get on to what you do in your business in a little while, because we've still got a bit of time up our sleeve to do that. Renan, I'm going to come to you and sort of ask you that same cultural question.
Look, I would like to imagine that there are no cultural influences on what I do. I'm uncomfortable with the word culture, coming back to your concept of ideology.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Populations use what is available to them. Historically, that's the case. That makes sense. You know, there's, you know, in Sumeria, there used to be probably 20 different names for wheat. Mm-hmm. I know you can think of many examples. You know, people use what they have. Okay.
What would be another word for it then? Would it be cultural? Not cultural, would it be regional?
Regional. You look like culture, like language, changes in time. But
so if there's 20 different names for wheat in a certain area, would it be a regional thing instead of a cultural thing?
No, it means that how much it's used. In old metaphors will be based on wheat, etc. But you know, there must be a lot of examples of it.
Freaker and spell.
But now these days, because of the postmodernity of the world, the big supermarket, and the beauty of being in Australia, you can almost do anything. So you can really get into do what you like. Do what you like. See, I was in Europe Greece twice this year, and if you go to Tuscany, the food may be wonderful, but it's so so shackled. You can't.
So that old Tuscan ideal.
Yes, ideal. You can't. They don't allow you to change anything. Eventually, you sort of want a bowl of steamed vegetables. You can't get it. What amazed me, he went to the supermarket there. The food can be very good, of course. You could not find a sambal chili. In fact, you could not find a fresh chili. It is abhorrent for them to put chili in their food.
Right.
It is. Yeah. But here, I personally, because I didn't have any cultural baggage, I just did what I liked.
Yeah, fair call. It is 27 minutes past one. You're on Joy 94.9. Tad Lombardo and myself, this is Cravings. We do need to take a brief respite. We'll return shortly to continue this discussion.
Hi, I'm Anna De Silva, and you're listening to Cravings with Pete Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
It is 22 degrees outside, heading for a top of 25. A good day for the clippity-clops if you're heading to Caulfield. I do have a tip for you in the Caulfield Cup, which is just a little later this afternoon. Tad, I'll give you that off air.
Thank you.
It's 29 minutes past one. We're on a bit of a... it's our own version of Food Eurovision right here in the studio. Kathy is here from Sweet Greek in the Pran Market. Renan is here from Claypots, South Melbourne Market and...
St Kilda.
And Lino is here from Simply Spanish at the South Melbourne Market and elsewhere. You all four of you, are based in a marketplace.
Correct.
You've gone out and sort of diversified, and you've gone and diversified out into other spaces. How important is that, being in that market and that sense of belonging to a community? You guys just said something off air that pricked my mind to this discussion. You occasionally have a glass of wine in your space and kind of have a chance to disagree over issues or agree over issues. How important is the marketplace as a base for you?
For me, it was crucial. When I first entered into the workforce, I focused predominantly on event catering. I became I was probably one of the very first people to do gourmet food at festivals. And I absolutely love that market feel, that festival feel. And I think the only place I could replicate that on a regular basis was at a market. It has that community feel about it. Yes, it has that the people, the traffic, the love of food. People are there for a particular reason. They're shopping. They enjoy fresh produce. And we were doing something that was a perfect example of that. We buy it, we cook it, and we serve it straight away. And it worked really well for us. So markets for me was incredibly important.
Tad, for your business.
Yep. I think it's obviously community as well, getting to know all the other traders, and you sort of gravitate to some more than others, obviously, because you're on the same playing field in a way.
But that's life. You gravitate to some people.
That's right, definitely.
Because those people that you don't gravitate to are generally assholes.
Exactly, yeah. Delicately put, Pete.
I am anything but delicate.
No.
Dad, you know that.
I know. But the thing is, like with Kathy, for example, we talk about the business side of it. And it's not in a situation where misery loves company, because, we're all working hard and long hours, but it's just, supporting each other and making the best of the long days. And it's just, from that point of view, it's not all work and no play, if that makes sense.
Renan, is it the same for you? Is there a sense of having other people to bounce off
I love it. I always wanted to be at a market, but I also realized that the staff enjoy it. And they can, there's shoulder to shoulder type of working with and everybody together. So the staff that I have, I've been there a long time now, they love that we are the places at the market. But let me tell you something else, a little personal experience. When I first moved there about 6 years ago now, I had to go early in the morning to see what's going on. And just walking, say 6 a.m., I don't know if you have the same experience, the sublime experience of everybody opening their shutters, their shops. So you never feel isolated. You don't feel like you are this, you know, lonely trader somewhere, stuck somewhere, trying to make ends meet. You see, you feel the humanity and you realize that we are all on the same boat, and that's really encouraging.
You're nodding furiously here, jumping in.
Yeah. For me, one of the most beautiful feelings is exactly that. I find getting up early in the morning and then driving to work, the roads are quiet, there's no traffic, and then you walk in and there's this beautiful aura of everybody opening their shutters and doors.
There is a solidarity there.
And we're all going to go into our shops and start preparing for the day, thinking of our customer base and what we're going to prepare for them that day, you know, and what we're going to offer them for that day. And that is just beautiful. I never get tired of that feeling in the mornings, that beautiful morning crisp air feeling.
But of course, I'd rather not get up. You know,
I'm so hearing you. All four of you, while that discussion was going on, you're all smiling.
Yeah.
So this is obviously a common feeling amongst the four.
It does bring back fond memories. Yes. I recall one of my early jobs as a I worked with a fruiterer years back, and I remember those winter mornings. Mm. I would go into the cool room to warm up because it was actually warmer in the cool room than it was outside. You know. And the smell of the vegetables in the morning or the fruit, it was an amazing, amazing feeling.
I think it's also the people that we serve in a way. Mm. They come to the market because they love what we do, and they want that one-on-one connection with the producer. And
which you won't get at any of the majors.
No, you wouldn't. And people that come to the market are generally wanting to learn something, so you can actually share your expertise with them, and they're going to listen and take that away. And you know, people want to know more about the provenance of the food that they're eating these days, and you get to have an integral part and a very important part of doing that, which is great. It's a privilege.
If I can flip that, what's the biggest challenge of being a part of the market? Kathy,
there are challenges, of course, and the hours would have to be one of them. And, of course, like Tad, I've started something later in life, so therefore for me I don't have the same energy and my body doesn't allow me to do as much as the younger people do, although I'm working just as many hours, but that's irrelevant. You know,
I think you get over about 35 and that things happen to
correct,
all of
us. So I think definitely the hours, being on your feet, and also the mental challenge of always trying to be ahead of yourself and trying to always be creating something different, something new, something that so that your customer that's coming into that shop is not feeling like, oh dear, I saw that last week and I saw it the week before. Yes, you have a core base, but you need to also be creating all the time.
Renan, is it the same in your businesses that you've got a
such as?
Yeah, I'm just sort of trying to take, because I guess your Simply Spanish and clay pots are kind of different
what
Tad
and
Kathy do. So I'm trying to work out how I want to get the answer or the question out that that I wanted to ask. The challenge of you being in a market?
Look, I think it's ideal for what we do. You know, we've created a space that is a bar with a kitchen nestled inside, and people sit around it. And I didn't realize, but it's very much like any tapas bar you might see in Barcelona. The food is great there. No challenges. I mean, pretty enjoyable.
Dare I mention the word council?
we deal directly with the market.
I mean, the market deals
is
with the
under the council, so it is hard. Yep. But now comparing markets a little bit. Look, all I can say, I totally agree with what you said. Dandenong Market, Victoria Market, Crown Market, they all got that place. But I feel lately, in the last year or so, that a kind of solidarity fusion has come into South Melbourne Market. It all seems to gel together. It's working. Changes have happened, but they are tasteful and sensitive. They shouldn't lose the market feeling. But I think it's working. It's working well.
Yeah. I guess there's a secondary part to that question, and I'm going to ask you the secondary part of that, Lena. Is it because there is investment into what has become a cultural hub, a place for people to gather? The markets, each of them have realised that this is a meeting place for, you know, I go to South Melbourne Market because I love it, and I'll run into some people who I know who live on that side of town because I'm a Westie. It's a place for people to gather and grab some coffee while they're out doing their Saturday morning food shop.
I think it's also a, and I know we're talking the word cultural and we're not overly fond of it, but there's a sense of quite a different identity at South Melbourne than there is at Prang. Mm-hmm. And I know there's an, and as there is in Queen Vic. So there's been an investment in all of them, but there's something about South Melbourne that's just, I don't know whether it's the gentrification of its audience or...
No, I think that little precinct that we've created down there has made an incredible difference. I think it brought it to the attention of the other markets as well. It's not something that can be done everywhere. We were just fortunate enough that there was that strip that was available. It had the big footpaths. It sort of ticked a lot of boxes, but it worked very well. And it has become a meeting spot or somewhere to eat, somewhere to rest. You know, we find people have their habits. So they'll either come in, have breakfast and do their shopping, or they'll do their shopping and come have some lunch.
Or we'll come with a hangover and get some dim sims, or dim sims dripping with soy sauce.
Yeah, or they drown their sorrows in a bowl of paella.
Yeah, which that's a good place to drown one's sorrows. Yeah.
Markets do that all over the world, don't they? Markets have been that place where you...
But I think in the past it's always been more about buying your fruit and your vegetables and your meats. I think now what they've done, and I noticed this in Barcelona a few years back, is that a lot of them are incorporating that dining experience within the market,
yes,
and they're doing,
yes,
it really well, yes, and I think that's amazing. Where, yes, you could, you've got your shopping, yeah, bags, you've just brought.
But
some,
that didn't work
beautiful
for me. So that's my experience as well. The idea was, I had not been to Spain at all, but I thought I'd create a meeting hub at the entrance to one of the passageways, yeah, and people will go shopping. I had hooks that can hang their bags, have a sherry, have an olive, go, come back. It didn't happen. Again, a cultural difference. Sorry, forgive me.
No. But
it did not happen. It did not happen. It was a very slow start because I think people, when in Australia, when people go shopping, they go shopping. That concept of grazing around and doing slowly, buy a little bit, have a sherry, then buy something else. Was not immediate. So I was wrong in the concept. But eventually.
Yeah, so it was a timing thing.
Eventually.
Isn't it? It's a timing
thing. It took me a year or two
to get it across
a little bit. So now it is happening to a certain degree.
Nothing is ever that straightforward. Mm-hmm. When I first started Simply Spanish, I refused to do paellas. Paellas, I'll say it properly.
Was it paellas?
Paellas, yes. Because I had numerous attempts at it and it didn't work. People weren't interested. So I decided I wasn't going to do it. And the strange thing about it was that it was, at the end of the day, it was the paella that put me on the map. It's just something that eventually people started asking for. I don't know whether it was the power of television or the media or suddenly it was brought to their attention. But, you know, going back 15 years ago, I could not sell a paella to save myself. No one was interested.
I think... I don't know that I have the answer, but I think I have a solution to the idea, in that the more in the last 15 years we travel more, there is that online connection to the rest of the world. We are seeing what's happening in all parts of the world almost immediately.
Correct.
So we've become far more savvy as consumers, and we probably didn't know enough about paella. Whereas now we're seeing it's almost everywhere. So I think there's that sense of connection to the rest of the world that we've always been challenged with in Australia from a geographic point of view. As we've become more sophisticated with globalisation.
How blessed are we?
And also, don't forget all the wonderful cooking shows too. Whether you like them or not, whether you want to watch or not, it's irrelevant.
Correct.
There are some amazing cooking shows on that also introduce us to different parts of the world and their cuisine.
SBS have a whole channel
SBS
of
SBS is
food.
Amazing, you know, with their food, you know. And so we're exposed to it from that angle as well.
And it's also, I think, the situation too where, you know, as time has gone on, you know, when you look in the past, you know, 15, 20 years, I mean, the average person's palate has developed in a way that you demand more and more, and which is why, you know, like the paella, that sort of thing has become quite, you know, mainstay.
Yeah, I fully understand.
And how wonderful it is that you started on Cecil Street,
South
Melbourne Market, and went on to conquer Spain itself.
Yeah,
exactly.
And you're showing them how to do it. It's awesome. I want to come back and talk a little bit about that competition, and... we'll delve just a little bit more into each of your businesses and what you do for those who are playing at home that don't know. Speaking of playing at home, if you are out and about, 0427JOY949, if you would like to interact with our program, you can email onair@joy.org.au, as Tad's mum has done from New Providence, New Jersey. You can phone 1300JOY949, or you can send a tweet to CravingsJOY949. You might be on your way to Pinot Palooza happening at the Melbourne Showgrounds this afternoon as well. wherever you are, whatever you're doing, we would like to hear from you. 0427 joy 949.
Hi, I'm Anna De Silva, and you're listening to Cravings with Pete Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Sorry, blathering away about chocolate and I was mildly distracted. It is 16 minutes to 2 here on Joy 94.9. Let's go to each of your businesses and what it is you actually do. Renan, let me start with you. Clay Pots has a strong seafood focus. What should we be eating now as far as seafood goes? What's the season telling us?
Oh, the variety. Look, Clay Pots St. Kilda will have about 20, 25 different species of fish.
Yep.
Every night. I would like,
are they all sustainable?
I would like our audience to note that we don't have a freezer. It's a very unusual thing for a seafood restaurant with no freezer. Also no cappuccino machine.
What's your wastage cost?
Nothing. So we buy, every morning the fish arrives, and we try to sell it the same night. And whatever is left will still be okay the next day.
Mm.
So
it's
got a wonderful rhythm and no wastage. Look, it became like this over time, and I think I'm here to tell you about the new venture.
Rather than
St. Kilda. So we got a new place named Barbarossa. Not Barbarossa, the Holy Roman Emperor, but Barbarossa, the Mediterranean pirate. And that's in Hardware Lane. Again, like everything I've done in the past, it's a little bit unusual, a little bit difficult. The concept there is bulk, cauldrons of food. You have to be able to go in. A bit like, I think you were talking about this before, it's all visually there. It has to have immediacy. In fact, the motto is, I always forget my own mottos, you know, health, pleasure, impulse. Now, the impulse bit is the chefs watch what's going on, and as soon as there's less of it, they cook, they invent something else. It's all seafood, they invent something else. But for it to work, we need to be busy.
Sure.
It's not a place that's going to, you know, happen slow. We need the people in there so that we can quickly keep making it, two or three items at a time. So looking forward to a good summer there and see what happens.
It's a good concept. What are you doing in the Simply Spanish? I mean, it should tell us, but apart from paella, which I hope I'm saying correctly, what else is there? What else? Is can I have some tapas?
We do the Spanish cuisine, so we're looking at things like the tapas. The paellas are huge, so we do the big pan, the one that we do at the front, which is hugely popular, and then we've got some gourmet ones as well. But I think being a market stall, I think we talked about challenges earlier on, and I think a challenge for us was the space. It's very limited space what we have there. So you can't be everything to everyone. So we've got to focus on a few things and that we could do and do it well. So I think we sort of stayed with the tapas theme with the pages, and it works for us. It allows us to do what we do it well and do it for the large audience that we have there.
Tad, let's talk a little about chocolate, because the guys were just, both of them, asking you about the flavours that go into chocolate. Yep. I think we're all done with salted caramel now. That fad can go.
Well, it's still there, though. People still demand it, so I'll make it as long as people want it. And I quite like it, so I tend to do things that I like, which is selfish, but my business, my rules. But,
When am I buying chocolates with a blue cheese filling?
During the cheese festival that's coming up. That's something that's happening.
Next Saturday, I believe.
Saturday the 22nd, that's right, definitely. That's the sort of thing. And I did a cake for Anthony, for me, as Maker Among Us first year. And the ganache, and that was all Roquefort cheese. And it was a different style of cheesecake.
That would make me eat chocolate.
Yeah. Yep.
Because I'm not a big fan of chocolate.
Yeah, and that upsets me every time you say
that. I say that all the time, and I see the smoke coming out of his ears. Kathy, grab that mic for a second.
Right.
You're so lucky, because chocolate is my weakness.
Wine is my weakness. Cheese is my weakness.
So all of that, I guess that's why I love food.
I think it sort of goes to what you were talking about at the beginning of the program. It's about a celebration of life. And we can sit around and try and be stick thing and eat kale juice for breakfast. And
oh, how boring. Sorry, but it is.
No, I'm so with you. That whole kale quinoa thing.
Come on,
done. Ridiculous.
Is it? You think we are over it now?
No, I don't. I think we are over it. I don't think they are over it. And I point out
I'm trying to introduce all that myself now.
I, I get really frustrated when there is a fad. And, you know, for the last 6 years, people are saying, next year's fad, we're all going to be Peruvian and Korean. Mm. And it's like, no, bullshit. We've been eating kimchi in Melbourne for the last 15 or more years.
Correct.
It's not a fad. Mm. Yeah. This obsession with putting quinoa in everything is a fad. This obsession with making chips out of a vegetable, kale chips, is a fad.
That's right.
Because they don't even taste nice. People think, oh, I'm being healthy. No, you're being a moron. You're being a sheep.
And having food on boards is a fad too.
Yeah, that's got to go. It falls off. Put it on a plate or put it in
doesn't
a bowl.
Makes sense.
And little deep fryer basket.
So let's all go back to basics, really.
No, I don't want to go back to basics, but I think there are some...
Simple basics is what I'm trying to say, you know, without following fads. Mm,
if we eat like we ate 100 years ago, where we eat what we can gather that's local, that's indigenous, that's fresh, that's seasonal.
Yes, yes.
If we eat that and we cook it simply and we allow the food to speak for itself rather than trying to trick it up with, you know... science.
Can I just say that that's what I try to do in my shop. That's exactly what I try to do. So I'm inspired by the produce on a daily basis, which is the reason I like being and running my business at a market. And that was a conscious decision for me to be at the Paran market, to be able to go out each day and be inspired by what's around. And the food is cooked and it's served on platters or bowls and it goes each day. It's keeping it simple. So, for example, you know, if I'm making an okra dish or a green bean dish, it just has the casserole. It just has the few ingredients in it, which is green beans, tomato, onion, and olive oil. That's
no garlic?
It. Because, oh no, not for this dish, but garlic in other dishes. But and that's it. And that you just because I just want to be able to taste the green beans. Mm. And I had someone who was doing while I was writing the book. I had a guy come in who was helping me as a cook, and also we have a lentil soup. Anyway, for some strange reason, he decided to change, you know, everything while I was gone. So he started putting, you know, smoky paprika into my lentil soup. He started putting smoky paprika into this, and he was a smoky paprika freak.
Was he Hungarian?
No, he was German, of all people.
Yeah, I think you'd find that the smoky paprika is predominantly Spanish.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know, but for what I was cooking. And then he would be pureeing celery and carrots and putting it into my green bean dish. Well, of course, I'm at home busy doing this photo shoot and cooking for the book. But the customers have an amazing rapport with me. So I got phone calls on my, Kathy, why have you changed your recipes? And I said, I haven't. And they said, no, you have. We can't, you know, it just went on and on until I had to stop what I was doing and go back to the shop and say, what is going on here, you know, so...
These are traditional...
These are... Well, it's keep it simple. Yeah. You know, keeping it simple is what I'm trying to say. Let the ingredient itself be the hero. Cook it in a simple way.
I call that food without fetish.
Ah.
And I really
may I borrow that?
Yeah. Yes. I'll email that to you.
Because I heard another... In the previous show, in Word for Word, that was on just before we came to air, I was on my way in listening in the car and there was a woman spoke about an intellectual orgasm.
Yes.
And I've been dying to work out how I can put that into my vocabulary as well because I love it. I love it, I love it, I love it. So food without fetish. Oh, I think there's a whole festival in there.
In fact, it's just like the cover page of my menu in the Evening Star South Melbourne Market. There's something I'd like to, just a little information to pass on about seafood. I don't know if the listeners are aware, some may be aware, that the bay, Port Phillip Bay, is now closed for commercial fishing.
Wow.
So when
which
you ask me what's going
more
to...
more for seafood?
Yes, there are your local varieties, all going to like calamari and leather jacket.
Is this a permanent thing?
Yeah, they brought in this legislation.
It's not reversible. Some of the fish will still be coming from the heads, but expect that, for example, calamari would, for instance, is you could get fresh calamari, like caught the same night.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, we have to rely on the good quality South Australian calamari. It's not going to come from the
which,
bay.
From an environmental point of view, is a disgrace.
When I heard about it, I said, great. I couldn't see anything wrong with you know, protecting the seabed in the bay. But the industry, talking to me later on, they said actually even the Greens were against it. The bay apparently is very sustainable.
It is sustainable, and it has been sustainable for a long time.
Yeah, so it was perhaps an unnecessary move.
You know, we have coral in the bay. We have our own coral reefs.
That's right, yeah.
Don't they dredge the bay as well? I don't quite understand it. One hand is saying to protect it, and they're saying we've still got to continue with the dredging.
Well, of course we do, because we've got
to. It's good for anglers and people with businesses running chartered boat services, so there'll be plenty of fish for them.
Someone's got to win. That's just not the consumer, I think. And I get really bothered that we're having to, when we've got a sustainable abundance of calamari, that we've got to bring it from South Australia or southern New South Wales. It bothers me a great deal. We will take one more brief interlude before we come back to wrap it all up, and we'll into our session that we like to perhaps call the plug, which is not really a plug, but just a bit of an information session in the last few minutes. It's gone up to 23 degrees. We're almost at our top. It's a good day to be out getting a bit of sun on those legs of yours. You're on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hey, today on the Escape Pod, Joe is interviewing Andre. Andre, like you, Tad, is a Taste of Radio graduate from here at Joy 94.9. So Joe's going to do a bit of a one-on-one. It's sort of kind of what we get to do every week. Talk about different bits. We did have another note from New Providence, New Jersey. This is from your mum. I love here this. It cracks me up. Hello, hello, Tad and Pete. I'm enjoying your show tonight. Each time I listen, it makes me miss Melbourne. I love my visits to Tad and Richards. Looking forward to coming back. And I'm looking forward to going to the Paran Market again too. So thank you, Linda.
Well, not the South Melbourne Market. What's going on?
I think we might have to give your mum a bit of a full bottle experience of markets after today's program.
Definitely.
So this last few minutes, we have a chance to talk about how people can find you and where your businesses are. So let's start with you, Lino. Simply Spanish at the South Melbourne Market. And
We're at the South Melbourne Market. We're at the Queen Victoria Market on Elizabeth Street. And we're in Bourke Street, Bourke and William Street. So all three have got a slightly different personality, but that's where we are. And if you're having trouble finding us, we're on the web, simplyspanish.com.au.
Awesome.
Up there with the times.
Indeed. Renan?
Yeah, we are in St Kilda, Barclay Street, close to the corner of Auckland, South Melbourne Market. And the new one is Hardware Lane CBD. And we also have a takeaway outlet, which does caterings and party functions, etc. That's on Fitzroy Street, St Kilda.
Excellent. And if people want to find you on the interwebs as well?
Pardon?
The internet?
Yes. Don't like websites. I have a web, a splash.
A landing page.
And it says, we are the best seafood. There's nothing else. No, there's nothing else. So if you have a lot of people, I don't know what people think when they see it. They probably try to book, find another more information. Nothing. It just says, we are the best.
Kathy, you're at store. Yes. Where is the store?
So my stall is store 702 at the Paran Market. I am in the deli arcade.
I was going to say, if I walk in from
Commercial Road, if you just look directly to your right, you can't miss me.
It's, excellent. Need the people who sell the pasta?
Further up towards Commercial Road. Right. Commercial Road, yeah. So you can't miss it. It's a big store, and the amazing display of cakes and food and things like that will stop you in your tracks.
Your second book is to be released in about a week and a half.
26th of October.
Through Melbourne Books.
Melbourne Books, and it will be available at all bookstores, also online, and, of course, at Sweet Greek at the Paran Market. It's going to be everywhere.
Excellent. Tad, grab that microphone for a second because we need to talk about Cioccolato Lombardo.
Yes, it's stall 97 in the Harvest Hall, also in the Paran Market.
And you're on the interwebs as well?
Absolutely.
Cioccolato Lombardo.
Yep.
If you actually type in Cioccolato, spelled just like chocolate with an O on it, you can actually find it. I did that once before.
That's cool.
And, of course, you can go to the interweb to joy.org.au/cravings. You can download podcasts of this program that happen every week. So in case you miss it, you can go back and listen to another show. There are about 28 pages of podcasts, and I think there's about 8 or 10 to a page. So there's a truckload of information there that you can go and listen to. Pino Palooza at the showgrounds this afternoon. If you're there, I shall say hello. Until we meet next week, we have Darren Purchase and Jeanette George joining you. A new book called Lamingtons and Lemon Tarts from Purchase, and Jeanette George, The Flavours of Barley. We'll have all of that next week. Tad, look forward to seeing you then.
Looking forward to it too.
And the Cheese Festival.
And the Cheese Festival on the 22nd, yeah.
The Escape Pod will take you travelling this minute. Have a good afternoon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.